Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, folks. Hope you are having a great Tuesday so far. In the back half of the 12 o'clock hour today, we'll visit with Ronald Serpas, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola and the former NOPD chief. We'll talk about some of the latest happenings here. One, the mayor and Officer Vapi's conduct. Where does this lead us? Plus the mass shooting in the warehouse district Sunday night. We'll talk about concealed carry, the passage of same, reached out to some of the legislators working on that. Seems as though a number of things have stalled. We'll try to get the latest there. We'll have some comments about a whole number of things coming out in the 12 o'clock hour. In the 11 o'clock hour is the NOLA Coalition segment. We'll visit with Daphne Barnes, Executive Director of Economic Mobility at GNO Inc. We'll talk about how they are kind of regrouping and doing things a little different there relative to the NOLA Coalition entering the next stage. They've raised about $8 million, I believe, of the $15 million target that they've had so far, which is a huge success. And we'll talk about that and other issues. Daniel DePetris joins us from Defense Priorities Fellow. He's an expert in Middle East policy, Iran, drone policy, diplomacy, counterterrorism, international relations. Simple question. Is Israel now at war with Iran? Does that state of war exist? And I'm kind of curious is whether or not the U.S. would exhibit restraint if we were on the receiving end. We seem to be asking Israel to exhibit restraint. I wonder what our response would be if 300 munitions were directed at the United States. The most recent happenstance that I can think about was 9/11. I don't know that that was a measured response, right? I don't know that anyone really asked us to exhibit restraint. I also don't know that any of us would have listened. So how does this work? It looks as though there's a little bit of duplicity going on here. And is this like crazy land where we would ask an ally nation to exhibit restraint when someone is firing over 300 munitions trying to create mayhem and havoc? And but for the fact that some of the allies stepped up and assisted Israel knocking out the vast majority of these munitions that were fired their way, still, there could have been significant damage, casualties, and otherwise, and we're still asking for measured restraint. We'll talk about that and more. Joining us now is Mike Cooper, president of St. Tammany Parish. You will recall St. Tammany was the brunt of, took the brunt of this storm that moved across this area just this past week. The governor visited St. Tammany Parish yesterday. And Mike, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Newell. Thanks for having me this morning.
Mike, give us a brief update on where we stand with the recovery.
Thank you, sir. And as you said, Governor Jeff Landry did visit us yesterday. We met at the Slidell Airport, had briefings with him. Our Director of Operations, Emergency Operations, Clint Ory, gave an executive summary of what we went through to prepare to the extent you can prepare for tornadic weather. But we had a powerful storm that hit St. Tammany, as you know, last Wednesday, including tornadoes on the east side of the parish. And significant damage occurred throughout the parish, primarily on the east side. And at one point, we had over 30,000 citizens, or from the power company standpoint, customers out of service. And that was at its highest point. And that number dwindled down to the point of yesterday morning, only a handful of customers out due to not being able to provide service to those structures because of damage. So a lot has happened over the past 5 to 6 days in the recovery efforts in that area.
So I know the governor arrived and put eyes on the damage. There's been, I guess, an effort to quantify the amount of damage in order to reach the threshold necessary for a declaration. Where do we stand relative to that?
Well, we began immediately after the storms. In fact, if the rain was still coming down Wednesday afternoon, when we mobilized our Public Works Department to begin the initial push, which is removing trees and debris from the roadway so that emergency vehicles and utility vehicles can come through. So our own Public Works Department has been working in that effort and even picking up debris to this point. Our contractor will begin today in a concentrated effort in picking up trees and debris. We have an outside contractor that's been engaged to do that for us. To this point, we have picked up approximately 1,000 dump truck loads, which is over 10,000 cubic yards, and we're delivering that to a location that we own and is permitted by the state to receive this type of debris. So to that point, we are continuing to pick up debris in these concentrated areas. There were particularly four neighborhoods, residential neighborhoods, on the east side of Slidell in the unincorporated areas along Military Road that received extensive damage. And we're concentrating in those areas while the city is concentrating on the impacted areas within their city along Pontchartrain Drive at Kossmeyer and along Old Spanish Trail where a number of businesses were hit. To this point, we've identified nearly 700 residential structures and 50 commercial structures that sustained damage. And that was as a result of people calling in to us and from our own building official going out with their tablets and identifying structures that were damaged and compiling that information so that we have that for future use.
I guess all this information was provided to the governor's office. You guys are, like most local government officials, are pretty much experts at this by this point in time. Do you feel like y'all have crossed the threshold for the disaster declaration?
Yes, I do. And Governor Landry did indicate that unlike declaring an emergency statewide or region-wide before a hurricane, he wanted to get a better indication of what parishes would qualify for that. And he identified three parishes, St. Landry, West Feliciana, and St. Tammany Parish. So he was going to execute that agreement yesterday or this morning when he got back. So he has determined that, in fact, we do qualify for that.
And that's important, as you well know. I'm not sure our listeners know, for a whole host of reasons, right?
Yes, it is, particularly for reimbursements of the debris pickup, whether it be through our own resources or through an external contractor that we hire so that we can get this taken care of as quickly as possible. So there is an expense to this, and we want to make sure we're moving efficiently and quickly to pick up the debris and to be able to meet the guidelines for getting reimbursement.
Mike, I know a number folks within the not-for-profit community have stood themselves up again, as they always do. If you would briefly describe the amount of assistance that they've been able to provide for you guys.
Well, that's a great point, Newell. As you know, government can't move as quickly to respond in every facet of this recovery. And while we were able to move with the debris, I can't tell you how blessed we were to have so many faith-based and nonprofits coming out to help. The American Red Cross, Louisiana Baptist, Disaster Relief, the Salvation Army of Greater New Orleans, Church of the King, based over here in the Covington-Mandeville area, all stood up to provide resources, to provide hot meals. The mayor of Slidell set up a center at the Fritchie Park where we sent tarps and water and other resources so that there was a centralized place for those impacted could come and get relief. So many participated and are still participating in this relief effort. So we're very thankful for that.
Next steps for you guys, where you are, obviously, in this recovery. I think there are a number of people that have been rendered homeless, right, and are trying to find alternative means and places to live.
Yes, there was an apartment building in the city of Slidell that was heavily damaged, and there was some 50 units in that apartment building. In fact, there was a rescue effort was made primarily by the parish fire district number one district that provided that rescue effort. We are seeking refuge for those who were left homeless, and that process is ongoing. And whether it be other apartment units that have availability, or whether we're seeking vouchers to place those without a home to have refuge in a hotel room or such. So we're actively pursuing that at this time, as well as continuing to move debris and to so that the homeowners, property owners, can move debris out to the curb, and that debris can be picked up. Fortunately, we have great weather this past several days, plus several days ahead, that a lot of progress can be made to provide the needed services that our citizens want and deserve right now.
Mike, do you get the sense that things possibly could have been worse? I know that a lot of the meteorologists were issuing significant warnings in advance of the storm, and a lot of good information being provided by your organization, your Emergency Operations Center, and others within the cities. In the aftermath of this, I don't know if you've had time to reflect, but do you feel like some people were heeding the advice, taking shelter and alike, and that the outcome of this could have been much worse?
Absolutely. First and foremost, while there were several injuries, there were minor injuries, and there were no fatalities and no major injuries. Preceding the storm coming through on Wednesday, on Tuesday, a decision was made by school superintendent to close the schools on Wednesday. And he thanked me, Frankie Jabbia, thanked me Tuesday evening, saying, I made a decision to close the schools tomorrow. You know, I'm getting beat up about this. I said, yeah, I'm sure you are. He said, but based on your office, your Emergency Operations Center, the National Weather Service, we made that decision. And not that we were hoping that we would have this type of weather to prove the point, but it did come through. And tornadoes were projected, and they did, in fact, happen in the eastern side of the parish. One particularly was an EF2, determined to be an EF2, which did most of the damage. But thankfully, we did have the National Weather Service and all the other resources available to us to make that decision.
Because in the end, it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario, right? I mean,
yes, it is. We've closed schools before and have taken drastic steps to tell our citizens to stay off the highways and such. And it was nothing more than a small windstorm or a small weather event. So, but we tried to take all the information that we get and make the best decisions from that.
But in the end, you don't really want the validation like you had this time, right?
That's exactly right.
That's kind of the flip side of this whole thing. And, you know, I guess human nature is folks are like, you've inconvenienced my life. You've done this, you've done that. But you can only deal with the information that you have. And it's not a perfect science.
And that's exactly right. In fact, Wednesday morning, our emergency operations center was on partial activation, which meant it wasn't the full menu of stakeholders that came, but we had emergency medical, fire districts, municipal, DOTD, public works, and we had those agencies all in the room just in anticipation of the weather. And sure enough, when we received the word of the tornadoes in the East St. Tammany area, we knew that we were at the right place at the right time to respond to this event.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining us and giving us an update. Best of luck to you and all of the citizens of St. Tammany Parish and all the other affected parishes. Keep up the great work. We appreciate you joining us this morning.
Thank you, Newell. We want to let our citizens know that we're out there. We want to get them back whole again so that they could go about their business and enjoy the days and weeks to come.
Thank you, sir. Have a great week. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. When we come back after the break, we'll visit with Daniel DePetris, Defense Priorities Fellow. We'll talk about the Iran launching an unprecedented attack on Israel, over 300 munitions sent their way. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Folks, you were a call over the weekend. Iran sent over 300 munitions utilized in a coordinated attack on the state of Israel. And Daniel DePetris, Defense Priorities Fellow, whose areas of expertise are the Middle East policy, Iran, drone policy, diplomacy, counterterrorism, as well as international relations, joins us. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Newell. Thanks for having me.
Daniel, I don't really know where to start on this conversation other than, and I would just simply ask, does a state of war now exist between Israel and Iran?
I think technically, yes. The problem is both parties, Iran and Israel, are doing the best they can to ensure that, you know, this mini war, as I like to call it, doesn't blow up into a major conflagration. And I think that's probably what the Israelis and the Iranians are trying to do. It's sort of like a symbolic exercise where they're sending missiles and drones in each other's directions, yet at the same time they want to make sure that it does not blow up into a region-wide conflict. So that's where we are at the moment.
So, I mean, how long does this continue to go on? We know that the Iranian proxy forces that lie within Hezbollah, Hamas, Fatah, Yemen with the Houthis, and the list goes on, they continue to bomb Israel and send munitions into Israel almost every day. They've been doing it for years. When do you get to the point where enough is enough? I mean, I just find it kind of interesting. We all know that these proxy forces behind this event on October 7th, which was horrific, the Israelis take out one of the leaders of these proxy forces that happens to be an Iranian general. And now there's retaliation for same. And it's as though none of this ever happened when we're asking for everyone to exhibit restraint at this point in time. And I always try to put myself in other people's shoes. And I wonder if this happened to the U.S., what would our response be? I mean, in modern times, I think back to 9/11. It wasn't an exhibition of restraint.
No, it wasn't. And if you recall, you know, before in the days after the October 7th attack, President Biden, you know, publicly and said, basically told Prime Minister Netanyahu that restraint is probably, not only a smart policy, but he went out and said, don't make the mistakes that we made post 9/11. There's no question whatsoever that the Israelis are under a lot of pressure with the Iranian proxies, particularly Hezbollah in Lebanon, which has been, you know, they've been launching drones and low-level rockets and precision-guided munitions into northern Israel since really October 8th, the day after Hamas's attack. So there's no question whatsoever that the Israelis are under pressure. And I personally view that the Israeli strike in Syria against, you know, that senior Iranian general as sort of a messaging exercise, telling the Iranians that we're running out of patience with all these attacks and that, you know, if the opportunity comes, we will target your people directly.
Well, why wouldn't they? I mean, everyone has actionable intelligence over what actually happened, both the U.S., Egypt, Qatar. I mean, it's the world's worst kept secret, right? I mean, it's kind of ironic that we look at these acts, of people that are coordinating the death and destruction of Israel as that there should be some safe harbor for them.
Well, the problem is that there is a safe harbor. You know, we don't like that, but that's the reality. And the Israelis are, you know, they live in a very tough neighborhood, and they have lived in a tough neighborhood since the State of Israel was founded in 1948. So it's not a conflict, it's not a conflict resolution problem. It's a conflict mitigation problem. So the Israelis have made the calculation that, you know, the best way to keep our people safe is to engage against Iran directly. And we saw that, you know, 10 days ago with that attack. Of course, there's costs and consequences associated with that. And that's basically what we saw over the weekend when Iran retaliated with that massive drone and missile barrage against Israel. So it's a very dangerous time. And I think the administration is probably burning up the phones with their Israeli colleagues saying, look, we don't want another round. Obviously, the decision to retaliate is up to you. But from the U.S. perspective, we don't want this to get out of control. And that's priority number one for the White House at the moment.
But it's not unlike we haven't been subjected to some of the same conduct exhibited by Iran, right? I mean, their proxy forces, the Houthis, firing upon U.S. ships. They Iran just now took control of a ship in the Red Sea. They continue to engage the U.S., not only some of our military installations in the Middle East, but some of our fleet out there in the Strait of Hormuz. Is there a line, or is that something that's just imaginary? I mean, we're not, we will take whatever they have to offer. I guess the question is, when do we cross the line? I mean, does Israel get to set a line now, or there's never going to be a line as it relates to Iran?
Well, I don't know if there is a line. I think your last option is probably the case. You know, the Israelis have made it abundantly clear that, you know, if the Iranians don't restrain their proxies in Syria, Lebanon, and in Gaza, the Israelis will escalate against Iranian generals, against the Iranian military. And that's sort of been going on for quite a while, honestly, but it's never been as brazen as it was last weekend. So we've sort of gotten a step above the escalation ladder here. And I think the United States understands that. And, you know, the priority, like I said before, priority number one is to make sure our troops in the region don't get swept into a major, you know, conflagration between Israel and Iran, which is a very difficult thing to do at the moment.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of interesting to see how this ultimately plays out. Are you confident that there's an end game here?
I believe it's my personal opinion that if the Israelis do not retaliate, as they have been talking about over the last 24 to 48 hours, we might get back to the status quo ante, which was, granted, the status quo wasn't exactly stabilizing, right?
But we kind have of butt ugly, have, I mean, to put it in plain street terms, right? I mean, I don't know how else to describe it.
You're absolutely correct. But the problem is, you know, in the Middle East, there are no good solutions here. So we have butt ugly or extremely butt ugly. Those are our choices, right? So, you know, mm-hmm. we try to make the best of the reality that's presented to us. And I personally think that if the Israelis mitigate their retaliation option, you know, or don't retaliate at all, this could not necessarily blow over, but if we could get back to the point where we were 2 or 3 weeks ago, which granted was not great, but it would be better. It would be far better than the alternative of a more violent conflict.
Where we find ourselves today in the aftermath of the actions of Iran over the weekend, is this better as it relates to negotiations for a potential two-state solution, or does it make it more complicated?
Well, it makes a very complicated issue even more complicated, right? Even before these strikes against Israel, the two-state solution, there have been no negotiations in over a decade for a two-state solution. And part of that is basically because, you know, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu does not want it, doesn't believe that it's in Israel's interest to negotiate one, and the Palestinians are all over the place in terms of their politics. So brass tacks, it probably doesn't make whole much of a difference, because the two-state solution at this point, I'm sad to say, is probably an imaginary, formulation. And it's a lot of U.S. policymakers don't want to admit that, but I think that's the scenario we're looking at right now.
Yeah, because that was going to be my next question. Why are we holding on? Why do we have this death grip around this policy position of a two-state solution? Only because it placates some of the far left here in this country politically for this administration?
Well, I don't think so. I think it's a matter of, you know, it's always been U.S. policy. Part of it is inertia, right? So it's always been U.S. policy to advocate for a two-state solution. And it's been like that for 4 or 5 consecutive presidencies, Republican and Democratic. That obviously is not happening at the moment. And we've had many negotiations in pursuit of a Palestinian state. None of them have panned out. And essentially, this is our only option. It's either a two-state solution, or we allow Israel to basically have a perpetual, you know, occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, which I'm not sure is in Israel's interests. And quite frankly, it would take an enormous amount of resources for Israel to do that in perpetuity. So, again, this is the least bad option on the table. Even if, you know, if we're being straight up honest, it's you know, the chances of getting a two-state solution at this point is about 1% to 2%, if not lower.
If we go back in time before October 7th, I mean, because a lot of people still are, I think, are kind of confused why this happened on October 7th. Why were the Iranian proxy strategies put into place that brought about this horrific attack on October 7th? And I'm just kind of curious your thoughts about that. My thoughts are simply that, you know, that the Arab nations and Israel were coming closer and closer together. Sunnis would be empowered. Obviously, that is not what the Iranians and Sharia law, they have no comfort in that. And that's kind of what brought us to this conflict relative to the, you know, the further embracing of the Abraham Accords or the continuation of same. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. You know, before the attack, the United States was sort of an intermediary between, you know, the State of Israel and Saudi Arabia. And the goal there was to essentially establish normalized relations, which would be a very, very big deal in the region and almost topping the Abraham Accords in the Trump administration just by virtue of Saudi Arabia's stature in the Arab world. You know, that obviously did not serve Hamas's interests. The Iranians did not want that. And a lot of the, you know, the Iranian-backed rejectionist groups in the region didn't want that. So I'm sure that was probably a factor in Hamas's decision-making, but I'm not sure it was. It was probably one factor among many. It wasn't the sole factor. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it, I mean, and I guess I'm coming back to the U.S. I mean, we have to recognize, same, that they are a disruptive, destabilizing force. And it mystifies me why we have this death grip on this two-state solution, where even public opinion polls amongst the Palestinian communities are still, the vast majority believe that from the river to the sea, and that Israel has no place in the Middle East at all, historically or otherwise. And we know that that's not true, but it's a, you know, they continue to embrace that, but those are the folks that they want Israel to negotiate a two-state solution with.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting to the point where it's not just Palestinian public opinion. You know, it's a lot of Israelis do not want a two-state solution either. And, you know, they have a lot of the Israeli population has a lot of problems with the current Israeli government. And, you know, Netanyahu is not exactly a popular figure now. But it seems, based on the polling that I've read over the last 2 or 3 years, that they actually agree with the current Israeli government's approach towards the two-state solution, which is we don't want one. Right. So we have the United States has a situation here where we're sort of shouting in the wind, saying this is our policy. We want you to work towards a certain outcome, when in reality the dynamics are just not in place for that outcome. It's unfortunate, but that's the reality here.
Yeah, I just I just don't understand where the end game is and how this is going to end up. I mean, and the only stabilizing force or the only protection that we have, both from actionable intelligence and everything else, is predominantly the majority that we get is from our ally Israel. You know, and there's so many others that have been on again, off again, friendly. I would never call them allies, but, you know, friendly more often than not sometimes historically. And we find ourselves turning our back on our most trusted ally there. And it's just I can't wrap my head around it as to, you know, why we find ourselves in the predicament that we find ourselves in. And we keep begging for something, as you point out, is really a pipe dream at this point in time.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, it boggles the mind. I mean, I wouldn't go as far as saying that we're not supporting Israel. I mean, we clearly are over the last 6 months, especially in Gaza, where we've basically given them carte blanche to do what they need to do with Hamas. And, you know, that's a whole separate conversation. But yeah. You're right. Look, I mean, the United States does not have great friends and allies. And I mean, technically, Israel is not even a U.S. ally. We're a strategic partnership with Israel.
Strategic
right?
partnership, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what that means. It kind of reminds me of Animal House double secret probation. these terms of art, you know, what's the old Shakespearean saying? A rose is a rose by any other name. I think they're on our side at the end of the day.
That's
right?
Fair to say. Yes.
Well, I, you know, this is what, and you know, you're expert. You have an expertise in this field. How frustrating is when you assess all of this and trying to pull it together and put it in its appropriate silos and figure out where we are and where we're headed? I mean, are you as frustrated as I am? And I mean, I don't know half of what you know. And I'm just confounded by a whole lot of what goes on here.
Yeah, I mean, the experts, right? I don't consider myself an expert, by the way. I think expert is a term that's used way too often in this field in general. But I do watch the region very closely, as do many other people. And I think there's a collective realization that U.S. policy simply is not working in that region, has not been working over the last 20 to 30 years. And yet they're... is sort of an aversion within the U.S. government to changing it and to reforming it, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, it's not a surprise that we carry over a failed policy. I mean, it's happened for the last three decades. If we don't have the backbone to change it and refine it in certain ways, then we're going to get the same results. So it certainly is frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely. Daniel DePetris, thank you so much for joining us, Defense Priorities Fellow. Truly appreciate your time and your insight. Have a great week.
You too. Thank you.
That's Daniel DePetris, Defense Priorities Fellows, areas of expertise, Middle East policy, Iran, drone policy, diplomacy, counterterrorism, and international relations. We will be right back, 504-260-1870 on the Okunor Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So when a question is asked of President Biden, what do you tell the Iranians and their proxy forces? And what do you tell Hezbollah, Hamas, Fatah, Iran, Yemen, the Houthis, the Syrians, and others? The president's response is, don't. And everybody kind of looks around and says, don't what? What are you talking about? Don't. Is that working? He has said it time and time and time again. Does anybody really understand what that means? Don't, but if you do, we'll tie another arm behind Israel's back. That's what it seems like is happening to me. I've got a number of texts of folks saying, you know, that we have to be measured. We have to exhibit emotional intelligence. Newell, your father, talked about long-term thinking. Do you know how long this has been going on? This is not since October 8th. Hezbollah has been sending bombs into Israel for years from Lebanon. The Syrians as well. The Houthis too. Hamas still doing it today. And others. All of which are Iranian proxy forces. How long was this going? The whole Iron Dome was to create a defensive posture to be able to eliminate the threat and not have to respond in kind. And in fact, that is one of the reasons why Israelis are upset with Benjamin Netanyahu. One, they believe that he let his guard down. Two, that he wasn't aggressive enough in dealing with the Palestinians in Gaza. And as a result thereof, October 7th occurred, and we were surprised, and they didn't have actionable intelligence, and they should have known, and they should have been able to thwart that effort. They were embarrassed. kind of a contradiction, right? But the reality is that I think a lot of folks are saying, how much longer? Is there a line? Is there a line? How much more can Iran get away with before everyone stands together, including the other Arab nations that don't think kindly of Iran at all? It seems to me that now more than ever is a time to put pressure on all of these people in the Middle East and bring an end to this shell game that's going on relative to Iran and make them pay and make them suffer economically and otherwise and drive them into a state of submission. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. Ready to go to the biggest jazz fest ever? Experience the music, food, and culture of Louisiana. Listen to Tommy Tucker, me, Scoot, and Sports Talk for the Jazz Fest Password of the Day. Then go to WWL.com/contest and register to win. Happy festing from Miller Lite.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.